John Barkley comes up to receive the trophy. This, for the Scarlets fans, is simply great to watch. They were outplayed in the first half by a Tudor side that picked and win. The 1872 Cup back in Edinburgh hands. They've beaten Glasgow.
The first team in 17 attempts to come to Dublin and get a win. How good is that for you?
Oh, it's great.
All I'm getting at the moment are players shouting, knock on, offside, tackle out the ball. We're in the wrong sport for that.
The Zeebo special gets it wide to Earls. And Earls from here means only one thing.
Best stadium I've ever played in, the best atmosphere, the best supporters. Hopefully one day I'll be back.
Should of course apologise to any Munster fans listening. They'll have something to say about whether Leinster are going to be in the final as the Scarlets come again. Oh, brilliant offload. It's Brady with a stroll in under the sticks.
Oh, look, it's been a roller coaster here all my life. 47-10. Jesus, I thought I was in dreamland when we won the Pro 12. Phenomenal, phenomenal.
Hi guys, so welcome to Outside Centres. Last week we were talking to Robbie Owens. Now Robbie Owens does the Squidge Rugby YouTube videos, so he has some like much viewed videos about La Rochelle, why England are awful, can anyone beat Leinster, why are France so shit. I mean, it's not all negative, in fact they're fantastic videos, anyone who's seen them. And so we're talking to him later on about basically the process of those videos and just a few other sort of broad rugby topics. Now, anyone who heard last week heard how bad the quality was, and we just decided that we were going to, because the interview was good enough, we were just going to run with it anyway. So we're just going to, at the end of our, myself and Dan are just going to chat now about the weekend that was in the Pro 14, and then we're going to segue nicely at the end into just listen the interview we had with Robbie.
Oh, so smoothly.
You won't notice any change in sound quality whatsoever. But it will get a lot more interesting, certainly, when he starts talking. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It'll be a bit less topical, but a bit more in depth.
Yes, exactly, because we're topical now.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, so topical.
So we're going to talk about the weekend that was.
Yeah, so I think starting off, we'll go with Kings in Ulster. I mean, down in the packed out stadium that was, I think there was more people watching than in the stadium, is more than fair to say, but I think there's more people standing outside the stadium than watching in the stadium. It was rather like the pictures that were put up were tragic. I think it's probably a sign that
summer hasn't hit yet in South Africa.
So summer hasn't hit, but also the Springboks were playing, and they had just beating the All Blacks. It was huge. So I think that was fair to say. I mean, obviously it was a bit.
I'm giving them a bit of a buy.
Okay. But at the same time, I mean, that's probably a bit of poor scheduling by the Pro 14, I would say.
And worked out well for Ulster.
It worked out very well for
They're
Ulster.
Now unbeaten. Them and Glasgow are the two unbeaten sides. Is that true? Ulster and Glasgow.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, both with three wins.
I mean, that's a great start to Hamilton's reign now. Up in,
absolutely. In contrast to last season as well. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, it wasn't all sunshines and rainbow up for Ulster. They were only 9-7 up after 60 minutes. So, but they managed to. I mean, the season goes through John Cooney's boot for Ulster so far.
So it was 9-7 after
an hour,
and then it was ended up 28-7. So was that three extra tries in 20 minutes? Was it or?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So I mean, it definitely is a sign. I mean, as you said, they're undefeated so far, so it's a sign of vast improvements for Ulster. Everyone, I remember, kind of. There were even rumours, well, some people were saying at the during last season, oh, why not just get rid of Ulster Rugby? I mean, what's going on up there? I think a certain former Irish left winger can kind of shut his mouth now about that sort of stuff.
They said the same about Connacht.
And then Connacht went on to win the league. Well, so I'm not quite setting the sights for Ulster that high yet, but I mean, John Cooney's definitely made a substantial impact for them so far, and it's definitely making
pretty
a
nasty
for
injury. You got,
yeah, I mean, it's a new haircut, but we'll go with it.
I saw that on social
stitches
media.
Stitches were pretty brutal.
He'll be out for a while with that, though.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a flesh wound. At least he didn't. He went through HIA and everything like that, but I think he's all good.
He'll be fine. Okay, yeah. So we don't need to worry about autumn for Ireland or what have you.
No,
because that'd be two scrum halves. I mean, obviously he's not in the top pecking order of scrum halves now, but obviously with Murray gone, he comes into the picture. Yeah,
well, I mean, if you look at the Leinster Dragons game, I mean, I think Jameson Gibson-Park is doing everything he can to try.
Well,
and
I want to talk a little bit more about the Ulster game against Southern Kings, because just going to mad one here, what I, occurred to me when I was just watching it in the background was that, is there a chance that Ulster have more Springbok players than the Southern Kings? And I thought to myself, no, that's absolutely absurd. It would, that like, this Northern Hemisphere team could come down to the Southern Hemisphere and actually have more South African players. But, you know, I wouldn't be saying it only. I did a little bit of research. And then,
did you know?
I did. What's rare is wonderful. And, so obviously they've got the flanker, Jean Diesel, if I pronounced that correctly, and Marcel Kutse, and they were both Springboks.
Yeah, crucial in the game.
I suppose he came on later on, Diesel. But and on the other side of that, the contrast that I was looking at the Southern Kings, and I could only find one, Bjorn Bassen, who was a Springbok. Now, there are no Springboks in the Ulster squad right now either, because they weren't selected for the championship squad by Razzie Erasmus, mainly because I suppose they're in the Pro 14 and that scheduling conflicts with the championship.
It is just scheduling based, because there was the whole introduction that Razzie Erasmus has been given this special dispensation that he can pick any players. But
So the rules in South Africa for selection have changed. Basically, he's been given a free hand to pick whoever he wants.
Well, it's changed for now, but it's going to change back after the World Cup, I think.
Yeah, but I suppose that immediately kind of leads on to this kind of interesting question about where South Africa fit in the Pro 14, because if you have a situation where these two teams, the Southern Kings and Cheetahs, are in the Pro 14 and are kind of out of schedule with all of the other teams, well then that reduces the chances of any of them ever being selected for the Springboks, and then reduces the chances of those teams ever getting the big South African players.
I suppose it opens it up. There were rumours at the end of last season as well about kind of more Pro 14, more South African teams coming into the Pro 14. I think it's an interesting one to look at in terms of how would that actually affect how would it affect the Pro 14, and how would it affect South African rugby? Because if you were to have the situation where a lot of the South African rugby teams are now, the club teams are now in the Pro 14, it would kind of make it similar to what the other national teams for the Pro 14 face. I mean, like Leinster, Munster, Connacht and Ulster always have that exodus of players during the Six Nations and during the November Internationals. So would it almost be just making a level playing field
for
any South African
You can
countries?
Have a situation, I suppose you can have a situation, even if you expanded out into South Africa and you had even more South African sides in the competition. I suppose by the same token Leinster and Scarlets always lose these players during Six Nations. You'd be losing these players at the start of the season while the championship is on. You'd also be losing them during the Autumn Internationals though as well. I mean, but that's the same for all the other international players.
I mean, that would be the level of playing field. I mean, at the same time, if you'd almost have to wonder, is it at the beginning of the season probably really the best time to lose your international players, considering most of the Northern Hemisphere sides didn't start their internationals. Like, I mean, Johnny Sexton
only started this weekend,
Peter
of course.
Peter Mahoney's first game
Josh
back.
Josh van der Fleer,
Conway, Josh van der Fleer. Like, there was
that was
kind
one of the themes
like,
from the weekend, all right, is that the Irish teams with their
the
home
great
games at Munster and Leinster, they put out their big players, their big guns,
No, I think it's definitely interesting. Just looking at the victorious return for the Leinster international players, Johnny had a slow start. I mean, I think there was definitely some cobwebs that needed
to
be.
He didn't get injured. It was a great start.
True. But I mean, the first half, they weren't making it look easy. I mean, 17-3 in a Leinster versus Dragons game. I mean, I think the Dragons probably would have been happy with that as a halftime score. But then, thank God, Josh scores the try. Everyone starts kind of, the motors start ticking properly. Definitely saw a vast improvement in the second half.
And it was
half.
A great try from Gwent Dragons as well.
Oh, sorry, Jordan Williams,
Yeah, we ended. I think we ended talking to Robbie last week kind of laughing at Dragons, which was not our intention. That was something he did.
It just naturally happened. Who knew?
So it's nice to say something positive about the team,
No, definitely. I mean, I don't think there's anything more stereotypically Leinster rugby than when an opposition player scores a try and everyone just stands up and goes, oh, what a fantastic try, and everyone stood up and clapped.
Oh, so little, you're going to put that down to politeness rather than being patronised.
Oh yes, of course.
Such gentlemen
in
the crowd.
You scored against us. Against us last year, whatever. But no, I think there was definitely signs of improvement from Leinster in the second half. I mean, it was a weak start, but like I said, I think it was kind of brushing the cobwebs off. But I think one team that doesn't really have as much problems with brushing cobwebs off anymore is Glasgow. watching back on the Glasgow Cheetahs game, there were some fantastic and clinical plays. For
it was
Glasgow,
a big scoreline.
Yeah, 52-28 to Glasgow. I mean, it was close. I mean, one of the key things I think that differentiated the two teams was both teams got a yellow card, but when Cheetahs had when Glasgow were shown a yellow card, Cheetahs scored 3 points. When Cheetahs were shown a yellow card, Glasgow scored 3 tries.
Yeah, well, that's
huge.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the other side of the coin, isn't it? Cheetahs were ahead at 30 minutes,
yeah,
and then got the yellow card. And then Glasgow,
I mean,
got 3 tries in those 10 minutes and then never looked back.
Exactly.
Now, obviously, credit to Glasgow, you take your chances.
Yeah.
But the scoreline perhaps isn't quite representative of what happened in the game, because obviously there comes a point where you just let it go, and Cheetahs did just let the game go. And say, well,
yeah, but I think that's what you see when you see a top-class side. They really can put a team away, and they don't let the other team even remotely come back into it. Like, for Glasgow, I mean, Adam Hastings had a phenomenal game. Ali Price getting 2 tries.
Doing the father proud, Adam Hastings.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as you said, Scottish royalty.
Mm.
So, but it was absolutely phenomenal. And I don't think this particular game was a flash in the pan for Glasgow. I mean, going back and watching their game against Connacht at the beginning of the season, as has been shown so far in the Pro 14, home advantage is massive. And then, I suppose, going down and Glasgow really showing their class and going down and beating Cheetahs in South Africa, huge. So I do think Glasgow are starting to show their class.
Yeah, well, they've won the last 3 games. Yeah.
My one concern, though, is, as happened last year, are Glasgow going to focus too much on the Pro 14? I suppose this is really where you can criticise.
Well, I mean, it depends on which perspective you're taking. I mean, if we're going to focus completely on the Pro 14, it's not a concern. It's great. The Glasgow throw all of their their efforts into the Pro 14 and then sacrifice Europe or European ambitions.
But did that help them last year?
They got
a bye in the first round of the playoffs or whatever for the Pro 14, but at the end of the day, they weren't in the final.
Yeah.
And they didn't even look that. Scarlets weren't uncomfortable. Scarlets weren't comfortable, but they weren't uncomfortable.
Yes, I suppose it'd be different if their season had included a quarterfinal in the European Championship. It would have been a relatively successful season, but it didn't. It was kind of, they were completely washed out of the European tournament.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't win a game. I think as you were saying before, they lost one game that they thought they were going to win in the Champions Cup, and then once they lost that, they said, "Ah, hell with it."
Let's worry about our domestic league, not worry about the European Championship.
Exactly.
And that's the level, I suppose, they need to be aiming for. If they overdo it in the Pro 14, maybe they won't hit that level in Europe, which is, they deserve to be getting into the quarterfinals.
They have players, and I suppose last year even more so, they had players that really should have been playing at a high calibre club European rugby level. I mean, they had Finn Russell, they had Ali Price, they have Stuart Hogg. I mean, they still have Stuart Hogg, they still have Ali Price, they have Adam Hastings, who's making more than a case for himself, Tommy Seymour, they have Hugh Jones. I mean, they really are staking a claim.
Well, they're former champions. The claim, I suppose, would be that Leinster are the best in the league. And anyway, and if you dispute that, you know, there's the interview with Robbie we had last week to clarify any doubts.
He's even got videos.
He does.
He's even sometimes disguised videos about how good Leinster are in others' videos. It's great.
I suppose in that conversation we were just saying that there's no way of getting away from the fact that it's Leinster, Scarlets, Munster, Glasgow. I mean, they are the four,
and that's the order
names
too.
There's nothing stopping Glasgow rising to the top this year at all. I mean, the momentum is behind them right now.
True. I mean, even talking about Munster there as well, you've definitely seen they're on the rise. Unfortunately, and I mean, as Leinster fans know, you have to say it's like an ex-girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever. It's seeing Joey scoring a try for another team. It's hard.
I didn't even watch it then.
It's hard. I mean, it was all over Instagram for me, and there were so many memes made about it. It was great. But it's just, you have to appreciate the skill.
What was the score with Munster again?
It's 49-13 against the Ospreys. I mean, you had the big guns being brought back in as well. You had Peter.
Ospreys are potentially in a bit of trouble this season.
They had a nice start, but then they're just...
Did they particularly have a great start?
Well, they won the first 2 games.
Okay, but they were destroyed there by Munster.
Yeah.
And next week, who are they facing?
They're, I want to say Scarlets.
They're against Benetton Treviso.
Ah, okay, never mind.
Yeah.
But
speaking about teams with a run of form, yeah.
True. Well, but just on the Ospreys thing, they did have 12 changes going into the Munster game. So right, I think they're really being experimental. Either they were writing this game off, or they felt that they really hadn't had a strong side.
Right,
in previous games.
Oh, they're playing some sort of games. That's something to actually talk to Robbie about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We were talking to Robbie last week about Ospreys, actually.
Yeah.
For all the Ospreys fans.
He was very very optimistic about them, but...
he was. He's a devoted fan.
Yeah. However interrogative he may be. It's a bit living off glory days.
I suppose it's been a while since Ospreys have been at the top. It's
yeah,
true.
True.
I want to talk a little bit about Benetton there and their run of form. I mean, obviously...
They put it up to Scarlets.
They did. They were only a point behind, was it? It was 31-29 at 80 minutes. And then Scarlets scored the try then after 80 minutes. And I think sort of what's interesting about Benetton, obviously we saw last year they beat Leinster, and obviously they're going to have these flash in the pan results. Yeah. Some people would call that a dead rubber game. Did it really matter?
But they've had a decent enough start to the season. I mean, they put it up to Scarlets and they beat Cardiff.
Yes, and they've won two games. They're two out of three. And what's interesting when you look at them, I know people always say that, oh, if you keep your eye on these Italian sides, the rise is coming. And I suppose what's interesting about Treviso is that they brought back in terms of the backs, they brought back some big names by Italian rugby standards. So Gori, Tommaso Allen, Tommaso Benvenuti, Jaden Hayward, Ian McKinley, some they brought back, some have been with the club a while.
And some have been Irish.
I mean, this is the thing. Well, I mean, I don't think anyone, I suppose, in modern rugby can sort of throw stones in that regard.
Especially
Ireland. And I mean, some of their flankers are old and non-Italian as well, even though they have Italian passports.
Yeah.
But their props, by and large, are born in 1994. And they aren't sort of like the superstars of Italian rugby. So what you have, I suppose, with Benetton is you have kind of this investment. There's money going into it. There's investment bringing players back, holding on to players. And they are investing a little in their own stock and their own kind of Italian stock. There's this system in Italian rugby where they invest in the strongest players. So rather than emphasise the most skillful the person with the best eyes in the pitch, they basically are the best hands. They emphasise size and strength, and this has led to we don't know what success has led to. We know that basically the props in Benetton and the props in Zebre but are all mainly coming from Parma, from their academy system, and are mainly doing quite well because Zebre have started the season quite well too.
Zebre have started surprisingly well. I mean, okay, in this latest game, I think Zebre have really kind of staked a claim that their home advantage is one not to be messed with. They had a bit of a shaky start against Cardiff. I mean, they went 21-0 down.
Mm.
But the final scoreline was 26-24 to Zebre.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, that's an indictment on Cardiff.
They celebrated like they'd won the World Cup. Yeah,
Zebre,
got the try in the 78th minute. Yeah. And fair play to them, so they should have celebrated.
It was huge. I mean, as we were saying with the South African teams, maybe it's a bit easier to beat them when you're playing at home and they're away, obviously all the travelling and stuff, but for Zebre, they really are trying to... That's their fourth home game win in a row. That's a new record for them.
Yeah.
So, it is definitely starting to...
And they won some, like, four in a row if you take into account last year's championship as well, so the games at the end of the season.
I mean,
which for them is like an incredible
four
run.
Four is, like, almost double digits.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing to watch about these Italian sides, I suppose Benetton in particular, is that when Six Nations season comes around and when the Autumn Internationals come around, the problem of bringing all these players back, as I was saying, or even creating through your academy system really great players who stay with you, is that when Six Nations comes, all those people disappear because they are definitely the ones being selected for the Italian side.
Yeah.
So you saw, for example, as you were saying, Benetton didn't have a particularly bad season last season. I mean, they beat Leinster quite well in the RDS. You can't be having a bad season if that happens, no matter what the excuses Leinster trot out. But in the opening weekend of Six Nations, they lost 57-20 to Cardiff. to Cardiff.
Yeah. to Cardiff.
Well, no, considering the weekend that's been. True. So that's 57-20. So that is the difference that the Six Nations makes.
Yeah.
So what system is in place in Zebre or Benetton to deal with the exodus? We don't know. I mean, so they'll be important.
Their depth would definitely be
to watch. But I mean, certainly based on this weekend, there's no reason why Benetton shouldn't be going to Europe. None.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, it's... You can see that they definitely have the quality there, considering how far Scarlets have gone in the championships, the European Champions Cup, or even just the Pro 14. There's definitely, you can see the profile of Italian rugby on the back of, like, even a close loss like it was, the profile of Italian rugby really starting to come up. I think, are we going to give some of that credit to Conor O'Shea? I have to give something.
Yeah, well, this system, as I'm saying, that this kind of counterintuitive system of just investing in strength rather than skill. I mean,
well,
if they have a great season, that has to be looked at.
Yeah, true. I mean, this probably backs your argument that, well, the English Premiership system does actually work.
Yeah, I mean, well, we'll be talking about that again.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an argument I stick to.
Yeah.
So I suppose the theme from the weekend is that Glasgow are playing well, which bodes well for the competition, that's final is in Glasgow. So the organisers will be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And Ulster are playing well. And could be, I mean, well, let's not overthink or overstate that. Ulster are playing well. I think they probably deserve a break, that team. So if they had a good season, I don't think anyone would hold it against them.
No. I think maybe just the one last thing I wanted to touch on was perhaps the Edinburgh-Connacht game. That was... So Edinburgh went 17-0 up and it ended 17-10. I think Edinburgh have a couple of issues they need to work on there.
I think I saw that game, I think, and I think you said to me, and maybe I'm wrong here, that Edinburgh nearly threw away that lead. Do you think that
Connacht
came close, did they?
I think Connacht were a bit unlucky not to... the weather was a massive factor in that game. It was quite sloppy, and I think the way Andy Friend is now playing rugby in Connacht, he's making Connacht much more of a running rugby style. Which is a bit unfortunate in wet weather, especially. Do they know where they're playing? Do they know where the home ground is? So I think that maybe the tack might need to change.
For Connacht
later on in the season once the rain starts to hit.
But that's how they won the Pro 14, is they never kicked the ball, they just passed and ran.
Yeah, but I mean...
The weather hasn't changed significantly in Galway since.
It will be interesting. Global warming, no?
They weren't sunny days but 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Or 3 years ago when they won the championship.
No. But I do think Connacht are on the rise, but... that game itself was in Edinburgh, but... I think it's just...
They have Scarlets, of course, this weekend. So that's... I mean, Scarlets have had close games. We don't really know what form they're in.
True,
And Connacht will definitely test them. They can beat Scarlets. There's no question they can beat Scarlets at home this weekend.
Yeah. So I think it'll be an interesting one to see and kind of see what style of rugby is really going to be the one that wins it for teams in the Pro 14 at the moment. Kind of... You have a mixture of some kicking teams, a mixture of some classic like forwards-oriented teams. I mean... It's going to be a wide variety, but I think it'll be an interesting one to see.
Well, the weather will probably win, really, at the end of the day.
True,
the
will probably win. True.
And they'll be able to run the ball.
Yeah, but I think when it comes
if they're serious about winning the competition again, they'll run the ball.
But I think it's going to be an interesting one to see in terms of the much-quoted stat that Pro 14 had at the end of last season, which was that Leinster, that the Pro 14 League itself had the fastest ruck ball of all. So I think that'll be an interesting one to see. I know we were talking to Robbie about that as well. So it's just going to be... impact does that actually have?
Yeah, and some interesting kind of... an interesting discussion around that about what that actually means, the stat that Pro 14 has faster rugby ball. Not to even question it, but what it would actually mean. It might not necessarily mean what the Pro 14 wants you to think it means.
Most free-flowing. Yeah. I think they're really leaning towards that. We'll talk to Robbie about that.
Yeah, so we're going to fade out now. And we're going to go back to the audio we had with Robbie last week. We're going to talk through basically the process by which he makes these videos. I mean, I'm very excited by these videos because I think the craftsmanship in them is incredible. And I think a lot of Bit fans would agree with me there.
Yeah.
And then we go on to talk about this question, the broader question. Yeah. Of
using his in-depth analysis, we're able to get some real good insights in.
And there's lots of things flashing up on the screen as we're talking to you, but unfortunately you can't see that in a podcast.
Yeah,
we're joined here now by Robbie Owens. Lots of people will know him from his YouTube videos. They have been a massive success.
Speaking of
they have, Robbie.
Yeah.
We're gonna delve into that success now.
Okay.
I know in an email exchange you were saying that it takes maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours to produce every minute.
Yeah.
And something that struck me, I was just, there's two sort of moments in your videos, and anybody who's listening who's aware of these videos, they tend to be relatively thematic. Yeah. Why have France gone crap? Why are Leicester? And in particular, I suppose the La Rochelle one as well, which I think maybe came out of the lip. Actually, I suppose if we start there, what attracted you to doing one on La Rochelle?
I think I've wondered that question as well, just who are they, where have they come from? It was, as I mentioned in the video, they sort of appeared suddenly, having been this team I'd heard of, didn't know anything about, at the bottom of the French division, didn't care, they were going to be relegated next season, fine. And then suddenly they were at the top, and I had no idea what was going on there. And it was the following season then, when they were in the European Cup, I think it was a game against Ulster, which was sort of, I think, their first game, where actually they were really entertaining to watch. And I slowly, over a few months, sort of started, you know, picking up on bits through watching them in Europe and through watching, you know, odd games you'd see on Sky and the top 14, and began to notice that pattern, as I talk about in the video, of them playing that, as I put it, expansive rugby in compact areas. And I just began to think, actually, that's interesting. And the more I looked into them, the more I did research around them, I thought, this is a really interesting topic. I'd like to do a video on it. So sort of, yeah, came out just finding that and stumbling across it, basically.
I think the main takeaway I got from it, the main impression I got was it was like Moneyball for rugby. The idea was that you had this management team who said, well, listen, we can't afford the best, but let's go for the best we can get in the position we have.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly like that. Only one of them looked anything like Brad Pitt.
speaking of movies, though, there's two moments that I just wanted to just point to contrast. So you're talking about the French. In one of your French videos, you're talking about how shit the French are.
Yeah.
Why are they shit? Will they continue to be shit? And you flick to this black and white moment where a guy has his nose in the air, he's got a smell. And this is the first question that comes to mind is, are you, when you're saying, okay, I'm going to throw in a video of somebody in a 40s movie, do you just go, guy smelling shit? Or do you, when you're watching things, do you actually take a note and say, oh, that might be interesting. Oh, I might throw that in.
I do Google guy smelling shit money. It's a coincidence. No, not my personal life. No.
There was another one with the weakest link. I think with the weakest link, the Conor Murray piece.
Yes.
You to illustrate how stupid rugby players are. I just was handed to you, really. You go to a celebrity weakest link show where a rugby player couldn't answer who Harry Potter was or something. Yeah.
There's another one on that one because it was a rugby player's special of the weakest link. I think it's Thomas Castagnier, the former France player, who was asked. It was like bourbons and custard creams are types of what? And he said butter. Apparently they don't have biscuits in France. What a loss. What they're missing out. Some of those. So the weakest link one, just I remembered that clip. I remembered watching that show when it went out. With the black and white clip. I'd weirdly spent an afternoon just watching, this was a few months ago, like 60s instructional videos,
right, yeah,
which are just absurd and ridiculous. And often those are the things that just something I'll have watched months ago, I think, oh, I can use that to illustrate this point, or I can come back to that. And I began watching a few of them back to try and find clips that looked right and looked like the guy smelling shit. Yeah, it's sort of, I suppose, everything I do, the supposedly procrastination, I try and feed back in and make useful.
Yeah. I know in the email exchange, I was comparing you to Adam Curtis, and you said you take that to people who aren't listening. Adam Curtis does these documentaries, BBC personality who does documentaries filled with relatively obscure coverage, obscure clips thrown together. But his method is that he just does not stop watching videos. That's what he says. And he'll take notes of things that interest him in videos, but he goes through the archive in the BBC. And I suppose the reason why I'm saying that is because you said you just found yourself watching instructional videos from the 60s. Most people don't find themselves watching.
Yeah. I've heard this. I think a friend of mine sent one to me and I thought it was funny and I fell down like a YouTube hole of just watching these. They were just like, how to throw a dinner party. It was like, Clarence, next you need to bake the potatoes, but don't forget to ask your wife to do it for you. It was sort of like properly like gender roles and just really outdated. And I just found them quite funny. But yeah, I'll take the Adam Curtis comparison any day. Sorry, go on.
Oh yeah, I mean he is incredible. But as I was saying, I think your videos are probably too funny to be Adam to be compared to Adam Curtis. In fairness to you, and in terms of that, I think a lot of the humor of your videos might actually be missed to a lot of people who might treat them like podcasts, I suppose, because there's an incredible amount of detail in the videos and an incredible amount of comments you throw in there. I'm just wondering, have you ever got a reaction to those comments?
As how so?
Well, I mean, through email or comments, this was on YouTube videos.
I get odd people picking things out I've said and mentioning in their YouTube comments on Twitter, etc. I haven't had anything from anyone themselves. I haven't had, well, other than Sam Warburton, which was bizarre. I haven't had Clive Woodward pick up on, you know, anything I've said about him in a comment. thankfully.
Clive Woodward has better things to be doing, I suppose, this day. He's doing the dinner circuit.
He's got a World Cup. He doesn't care what I have to say.
Yeah. But tell us about Sam Warburton. Ears peeled now, yeah?
What did
Sam Warburton say to you?
That was bizarre. It was the day I put that video up, and I've gotten to habit now of basically... Because when I put the first one up, I felt sort of anxious of, like, how's this going to go down? How's this going to go? And like, I sent it to a number of people, a number of sort of things on Twitter and so on, to try and spread it out. And just went, right, I'm going to go to the closest cinema. I'm just going to see whatever's on next for 2 hours. So I don't look at my phone. I don't look at anything for 2 hours. And I got into the habit of doing that, sort of going to the cinema each time I put a video up. So I came out of the new Mission Impossible, having really enjoyed it, and turned my phone back on. And there was, like, 300 Twitter notifications, including one from Sam Warburton himself. Which says, oh, yeah, enjoyed the video, thanks for appreciating the dark arts, thanks for all the support, I really appreciate it. And I almost exploded in the cinema lobby.
Well, I mean, you didn't really have anything bad to say about him in the video, though.
That's true, he's not Clive Woodward.
And I do wonder sometimes, do you think that the amount of detail that you put in, I suppose, I don't know how to frame the question, do you think that sometimes it might be missed? I mean, there's one comment here. Yesterday, I was just trying to catch a comment. I knew it was something rude about Rob Carney.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out what exactly it was. And I had to keep trying to pause. And then eventually I saw it. And it was something along the lines of, he falls for every dummy. Seriously, have you ever seen face two men coming at him? And that, I think, was the line. But you had to pause it quite strictly to catch it. I'm just wondering... do you feel, to a certain extent, that it's almost like a blog and a podcast in one?
So that's an interesting opinion, actually, yeah. The way I always looked at those is they're sort of extras that you can look for if you want, and, you know, you can perfectly as easily ignore. And I like to think anything that you need to get to, you know, to enjoy the video, hopefully, you can get one viewing round and it's on the screen for long enough. Whereas there's other bits I put up as, like, as I say, as extras.
Easter eggs,
exactly. So there are things in some videos that are on screen for a frame. And, you know, there are jokes that I know literally no one will get, but they amuse me. And I think, well, if there's enough things in there, it's okay if literally two people get that joke I put in, because, you know, two different people get this one and two different people get that. That's how I justify it to myself anyway. But yeah, there are a lot of people always saying, slow down, etc. I've developed a style by this point, and I'm quite happy with the way I do it, and I like packing it up as much as I can and feeling like I put everything in I possibly can into the video.
And you're saying, so a video like that would take you a weekend, a full weekend, is it?
It's often more than that, it depends. So the sort of normally, basically the process is to sort of run through it, is once I've sort of got a topic in mind, I'll do some research, so that's both, I'll read up on it, I'll read what I can around the topic, as well as watching games back and either applying what I read about it or trying to spot other things myself as well, in terms of both analysis and just patterns and whatever. And then once I've got that, I'll begin and sort of I'll make notes. So like for the Dan Biggar one, I went through, or the Wales fly half one, for example, I went through both of the games Dan Biggar played in the Six Nations up to that point and wrote down like his every touch and what he did in a notebook. So often they are quite detailed, the notes I take. And then once I've got those notes, I'll begin to write a script and I'll do a few drafts of that. And then once I've got that, I'll record it and then sit down to properly edit it. And that will take, yeah. It's normally a few days if I'm to really go for it and I'm to sort of, you know, spend all day, every day on it, which is to say I can. So the last one, the Crusaders one, I did in about 3 days, the editing bit. But because I knew what I was doing and I knew where I was at that point. But it was sort of getting up at like 9 a.m. and basically with just a couple of breaks from working through to like 10 at night. Just because I have no real respect for my body or my...
But it wouldn't be fair then to say it's even like 3 days, because I suppose you're always thinking about it. So of an evening, you're watching a game and maybe taking a couple of notes that you might use in a couple of weeks' time. So it is an incredible amount of work.
Yeah. I didn't quite think it was going to be this much.
I appreciate it, though. Sorry, that's what I meant. I think you've got a big and growing fan base. I think it is working out. I came to dead air there. Sorry. And I suppose just to move on. Sorry, we've been talking for a while. Move on to talk more about rugby. Do you go to games yourself, Robbie?
Not that often, because you know, I'm sort of exiled. I've grown up in Nottingham in England with Welsh parents, so don't get many chances, you know, living in the East Midlands, to get down to Wales to watch games myself.
That's the choice for you. Either you're an Ospreys fan, of course, so you're either going to Ospreys or that's it. You're not going to go to the Premiership games. You haven't found one that suits you, no?
I've been to watch Nottingham in the Championship and Leicester a fair few times, but you know, not regularly because I'm not, I guess, invested in the same way.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
And so I suppose to get into what we were talking about previous, I think on our email exchange, if you want to talk about the rock games.
Oh, yeah. So I suppose it's through the email exchange we've been talking about. One of the things that particularly struck me at the end of last season, Robbie, was how Pro 14 really were pushing this statistic that they had fastest rooks on average across the Northern Hemisphere leagues. I think that was kind of an interesting approach, and it almost really trying to get people to earmark them as the Northern Hemisphere equivalent of Super Rugby in a sense. But so it's kind of the idea what motivates the faster rooks in the Pro 14. I think you're saying it's kind of the players themselves wouldn't be as established, so it's really trying to just catch them off guard. But I think, is there any more to that? I mean,
well, so what's your explanation as to why there would be a quicker rook ball in the Pro 14 versus the Top 14 or the Premiership?
I think there's probably a large number of factors that, as with sort of as anything in rugby, I suppose, but a large number of things that would factor into it. But I suppose partly, as you're saying, there's something in, you know, players not being playing a different standard to what they used to. Either there was an interview with Sam Warburton fairly recently in which he talked about basically stepping down to the Blues level, and how things, you know, played out sort of slower to a degree in which he wouldn't be as involved in the game as he would because he was used to playing at a far quicker pace.
Right.
So a bit like sort of, you know, like I'm, without meaning to boast, quite good at Tetris. And so I drop the blocks incredibly quickly because I'm used to it playing the game, playing far quicker than it does when you first start a game. And I think it was sort of that sort of thing of just he wasn't getting as involved because he was having too long to think about it. I don't know if there's something in that, but then equally you've got young players who are stepping up a level and you haven't yet found that, so you've got something of a level in between. Go on.
Yeah, just a side question there, I suppose, because just it ties into the Sam Warburton video. He felt he was kind of dropping down a level in the Carrick Blues, did that not have an impact on his international game? I mean, you'd say not.
I didn't find not. I don't know if that was why, because he wasn't adapting down. You know, he didn't play much for the Blues, really, especially over the last few seasons. I don't know if that was a factor in why he was able to maintain you know, former international level, because he wasn't going up and down. He wasn't having to adjust, I suppose. I don't know. I suppose you'd have to ask him.
But I suppose, so one of the points that I think was made there was just the idea that if you have better players, they're able to, against weaker defences, they're able to speed up the ball and take advantage of this. So the fact that you've got a fast ball might actually be indicative of a disparity in the league, I suppose. Would you buy into that idea?
Yeah, possibly. I think, as I say, there's probably just endless numbers of possible solutions, and just, you know, the way teams choose to play in terms of, do they look to attack more? As I think I mentioned in the France video, not to repeat myself, but often people talk about quick ball being, assuming it means attacking ball, when actually France had the quickest ruck ball in the Six Nations. And it's just because they were just doing endless, just sort of, you know, one out runners, just forward drive after forward drive rather than attacking. So there are different explanations for it. It's not as simple as, and it isn't to say that's less legitimate, you know, but yeah, there's a number of different explanations for that statistic.
I think the implications as well, it kind of is assumed that's going to be faster ball. But I think if you look at how the Premiership started this season, it's been, the defence hasn't been fantastic. There's been quite a lot of broken tackles and stuff like that as well. So it's kind of seen implications. Yes, they're saying that's quicker with ball. But I think, yeah, to your point about France, does that mean that they're just taking it into contact a lot more often? And as a result, then you're going to have quicker ball from that. So is it just going to be pick and roll? Or is it going to be more free-flowing rugby? And I think that will come kind of later in the season when you see more of the internationals coming back in Pro 14. You might actually see how does that actually crystallise into, is it going to be more free-flowing rugby or is it just going to be stop-start? I think it's kind of an interesting approach to take as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, sorry again about that audio with Robbie. Hopefully we'll get something a bit more sorted next time we're talking to him. But for now, yeah, that's all from us this week. So we'll chat to you guys again.
John Barkley comes up to receive the trophy. This, for the Scarlets fans, is simply great to watch. They were outplayed in the first half by a Tudor side that picked and win. The 1872 Cup back in Edinburgh hands. They've beaten Glasgow.
The first team in 17 attempts to come to Dublin and get a win. How good is that for you?
Oh, it's great.
All I'm getting at the moment, our players shouting, knock on, offside, tackle out the ball. We're in the wrong sport for that.
The Zeebo special gets it wide to Earls. And Earls from here means only one thing.
The best stadium I've ever played in, the best atmosphere, the best supporters. Hopefully one day I'll be back.
I should of course apologise to any Munster fans listening. They'll have something to say about whether Leinster are going to be in the final as the Scarlets come again. Oh, brilliant offload. It's Brady with a stroll in under the sticks.
Oh, look, it's been a roller coaster here all my life. 47-10. Jesus, I thought I was in dreamland when we won the Pro 12. Phenomenal.